Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Hello and welcome to the third episode of the Unusual Suspects Pop Culture and Whiskey, the podcast in which Troy and I talk about movies, games, comics, and all other geeky stuff. So how are you doing today, Troy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
It's hot.
It is fucking hot, and it's very hot. Okay, so let's jump into some trailers straight up. So
first, Trailer Park.
Yeah, Trailer Park. first up is a second trailer for Oz the Great and Powerful, the new Wizard of Oz prequel directed by Sam Raimi, best known for his Spider-Man films, starring James Franco as the Wizard of Oz. Mila Kunis, Rachel Weisz, and Michelle Williams as the witches, and Zach Braff does the voice of the flying monkey.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
He has that one line in that one trailer. So what did you think of the trailer?
It looks really cool. Like, I love The Wizard of Oz, but even someone that wouldn't be a Wizard of Oz fan, I think, could get into it. It looks very cool. Because it was the producer or director of Alice in Wonderland?
It'd be producer because Tim Burton directed it.
Yeah, that's right. So it's got a very...
They're both Disney properties.
But it's got a very Alice in Wonderland feel to it,
yeah.
To the trailer anyway, so
it looks pretty cool. I mean, Sam Raimi was supposedly working on the Sims movie, so obviously,
oh god,
yeah,
thank god he's not doing that. Sims movie,
yeah,
oh
no, sorry, no, I got that wrong. He's working on the World of Warcraft movie,
oh, just as bad, in my opinion, anyway.
And I think that he's passed on it to finish up work on this. They're still working on a thing, but yeah. It looks pretty cool, you know. Lots and lots of crazy different CGI. James Franco doing his thing where he grows really bad looking facial hair.
And, I like James Franco's.
No, I like James.
Hair.
Oh, it looks really, really childish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a young man.
He's older than me. I mean, look at this Gertie. That's right, people listening. Look at my Gertie. The Mortal Instruments City of Bones, which is a series of books being adapted for films. The most I know about the books is they are in similar vein of Twilight.
No,
romance books.
Not so much romance.
Yeah, it's about romance.
They're young adult novels, but they're not along the gay lines of Twilight. I haven't read them, but...
So how do you,
from the synopses that I have read... They're not as bad as Twilight, but even apart from the books, the trailer itself actually looks pretty damn cool.
A girl peers into this other world of demon hunters and demons, and it looks pretty cool, looks pretty interesting. Yeah. So a lot of action, bit of supernatural.
A lot of cool fight scenes.
Yeah. A lot of that dude cutting people.
Kind of reminded me of...
I'd say Constantine.
No, was the film... God... It's gonna kill me. We'll come back to it. So the guys who did Underworld produced Underworld, and they did that film where it was the four high school kids, and they just pushed around energy. They didn't actually have powers per se.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You will. I'll remember it. I will. All right.
You work on that. In the other, what looks like a book turned movie, I don't know if it is. Beautiful Creatures, which is about witches and romance.
That one.
Yeah, it looks pretty good.
No.
What? It's got Jeremy Irons in it as the head of family. Forgot her name, doing witchy things. A bunch of witches in it, bunch of magic.
Oh, no, actually. I apologize. That was the one that looked cool.
You were thinking of The Host, the other Twilight novel from Stephanie Meyer.
Yay.
Don't worry about it.
Twilight with aliens.
It's written and directed by Andrew Niccol, who did Gattaca, which is a great film. He did In Time, which is a pretty good film.
But
you can
Stephanie Meyer. It's
but you don't like just because you have to buy the rights of the book doesn't mean you have to follow it to a T. He could use the basis of the idea and turn it to something really interesting.
It still looks like they've taken the zombies and werewolves or whatever the
vampires,
whatever the hell it is.
If it had zombies in it, it'd be slightly more interesting. A zombie romance movie, per se.
But we've got a good one of those coming out anyway. But they've taken them out and replaced them with aliens. It's
not that. It's not just that.
It's not just that, but...
I mean, they do glow in the dark, and no, they don't.
No, their eyes do.
So beautiful.
They sparkle.
Yeah, we're getting a bit
Everything
off.
Everything has to sparkle.
Getting a bit off topic, yeah. Beautiful creatures. Witches, action, romance. What looks like the South. I don't know that much about America, but possibly Louisiana, because that's pretty much all I know about that area of America. The Midwest, I don't know, somewhere around. They all have thick,
Midwest.
Heavy accents. Snitch, the new Rock film, Dwayne Johnson, as he's called these days, which his son goes to prison for trafficking drugs, so somehow, in a very unlegal fashion, works out a deal with the district attorney in order to take down prisoners, take down criminals
drug
himself.
Cartel, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, for the help of the bad guy from Walking Dead, you know, the dude with the big nose. Don't know his name.
Shane, he was.
Yeah, he played Shane.
Yeah.
He's been in other stuff too, which I see him every now and then. It's pretty cool.
A few small things.
He played Al Capone in the second Night at the Museum film. Yeah. So, you know what? It's The Rock. As long as he isn't making crappy kids films or trying to make crappy action films like Faster, I'm okay with it.
Yeah. It didn't look too bad. It's your typical action film. It's nothing to get too majorly excited about, but
yeah.
It didn't look too bad.
No, it was interesting. Jack and the Giant Slayer. It's the second trailer for that. There's been a trailer out for quite a while.
About the trailer last podcast.
Yeah, pretty quickly. Yeah, Bryan Singer making a version of Jack and the Giant Slayer. Nicholas Holt, who was Beast. Ewan McGregor, Ian McShane, Stanley Tucci. The trailer has Ian McKellen voicing over on the top,
yeah.
Doing his best fee fi fo fum. Which is pretty cool. So that's pretty cool. The Heat. A Sandra Bullock, Melissa McCarthy as opposing forces in a buddy cop film.
I guess for those who don't know, Melissa McCarthy, if you've seen Bridesmaids, was our bigger girl out of the bunch of the Bridesmaids.
Or she was also in Gilmore Girls for years as Suki.
Oh.
Yeah, I watched a lot of that. Yeah. It's a cool show.
That's sad.
It's not sad.
She was fantastic in Bridesmaids.
She's also
made that movie. So
she's in a film with Ryan Reynolds. I cannot remember the name of the film. It's a really great film.
He's been in hundreds.
He hasn't been in hundreds of films.
Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah, he's been in like 20 films.
It's close to none.
It's... Okay, it was after Blade Trinity. Or was it before Blade Trinity?
So we're talking like Van Wilder buying the cow days.
It's a bit
waiting.
After that. I'll remember the name of that film. It's really cool. It's this really interesting take on gods and
Green Lantern.
Yes, it was Green Lantern. That's right. Melissa McCarthy played the giant crow thing.
Yes,
I
assumed as much.
And last but not least, probably the best trailer we saw all this week. The one I didn't even hear about it till 5 minutes ago when we watched it. Now You See Me, which is a reference to obviously Now You See Me, Now You Don't. It is. Okay,
watch this trailer. We will put it on the page. You have to watch this trailer. If you are a fan of Zombieland, if you're a fan of any cool movie in the past 10 years, you have to see this trailer.
Jesse Eisenberg and Woody Harrelson and James Franco and Isla Fisher seem to be magicians. But with a twist, they rob a bank with teleportation or something. And then they're also not robbing a bank. They're also doing some other jobs. Mark Ruffalo is the cop trying to track them down. For some reason, Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine are just hanging out in a bar talking about it. But it looks really awesome. Jesse Eisenberg, of course, is great every time he's in something.
Woody Harrison's great in everything ever.
Yeah, there's a really interesting moment in the trailer where Jesse Eisenberg is handcuffed to the table, and then 2 seconds later, Mark Ruffalo is handcuffed to the table. He's like, yeah, what are you going to do? Directed by Louis Leterrier, who did the great version of The Hulk, the second one with Edward Norton. And then went on to do the terrible Clash of the Titans. But that film has more, I think, producing problems with it than anything else. So he's still a really good director.
Yeah.
So that is probably our trailer of the week.
Yeah, definitely trailer of the week.
Super interesting. Definitely one to check out and one to look for in the future. So that's pretty much all we got for trailers. Let's move on to some movies and television. So first up is news. Not directly out of Disney yet, but started as rumors and now as most people reporting it as fact until Disney actually say it as fact We won't take to that, but at the moment it is announced that Lawrence Kasdan and Simon Kinberg are the writers of parts 8 and 9 of the new Star Wars the Star Wars movies, although no one knows which one's doing 8 and 9. Simon Kinberg, which from what I've written down, I'm not a huge fan of his stuff. XXX2, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, X-Men.
I love Mr. and Mrs.
Smith. I don't like that film at all. X-Men 3 with Zach Penn. Jumper, which is an awesome film, Jumper, but I don't think the script is that its best.
Jumper was good.
And he did the final draft of Sherlock Holmes, which is probably the stuff I like the most from his.
Now, first Sherlock Holmes or second?
Yeah, first.
First.
Yeah, the good one.
Yeah. But the second one was alright, just wasn't as
it was too chaotic and all over the place. Yeah. But he did the final draft, so I don't know how much of the actual creation process he was.
There's some ups and downs there, so it could be.
But then on the other side of the coin, you have Lawrence Kasdan, who's best known as the co-writer of both Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
Empire with Lee Brackett and Jedi with George Lucas. But from what I can tell, is everything else he's done from then to now, I have never heard of it. He's written and directed and produced a whole bunch of stuff, which I haven't heard about. I didn't write any of them down. I'll check them out at some point to kind of catch. The only thing I did notice was he wrote and directed the adaptation of Dreamcatcher in 2003, which I liked. You know, it wasn't great, but it was alright. Then he did nothing until this year, in which he co-wrote and directed a film with his wife called Darling Companion. Now, you probably haven't heard of it. Most of the reviews that came out for it were highly negative of it. So I'm gonna try. I tried to memorize the plot synopsis from Wikipedia because it was a pretty terrible plot. Something about a woman who loves her dog more than her husband. Then her husband loses her dog. Then she goes to a psychic who tells her something or other. And then they're in a plane. And then she sees the dog at the window. And then the husband fakes an appendix to get off the plane. And then they find the dog.
Wow.
So from Star Wars to that.
But at the same time, some people have their niche. Maybe Star Wars is the only thing he's good at.
Like I said, I didn't know any of the other films. He's also working on a Robotech movie.
Robotech. Wow.
Yeah, that was cool. I really liked the original series of Robotech.
Yeah,
should
be interesting.
Whatever it's supposed to be called. Isn't there
Robotech? Yeah, there's a proper name for
it. Yeah, the English version of something is Robotech.
Yeah.
Macross Saga or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So those are the Star Wars news of this week. By the sound of it, we're going to have Star Wars news every week, constantly. Because
throwing up news.
There is a Sam Fisher movie in the works.
Splinter Cell.
Splinter Cell movie in the works with Tom Hardy playing Sam Fisher.
Sam Fisher, video game wise, isn't that beefy of a dude.
He isn't, but the thing is, all of his character customization comes from Michael Ironside, who does his voice.
Yeah,
he gives this. Yeah,
like physically.
Well, Tom Hardy's been getting big for Bane, so I don't think he's. I think he's probably gonna like lose a lot of that muscle mass.
Try to, yeah.
After finishing Batman. Apparently, though, this adaption's been in work since 2006. Recently, managed to secure Tom Hardy as a star. Eric Warren Singer will write it, who wrote The International. Relatively good, I reckon. Anyways,
good watch.
Not really an action film. Kind of got tricked into that. I thought it was an action film, but it was a good film. Brandon T. Jackson has been announced to play Axel Foley in the upcoming
TV series.
What's that? I'm forgetting everything that there's. Play Axel Foley in Beverly Hills Cop TV series.
Yes.
So,
and it's being co-written and directed by Eddie Murphy as well.
He's producing it. I don't know how much involvement he has in the project. It is being run, so probably mostly written and produced by Sean Ryan. Sean Ryan, of course, has done great things with television, such as The Shield, The Unit, Terriers, which was unfortunately... Terriers.
Yeah.
It's like a pit bull terrier.
Yeah.
Yeah, Terriers. Which was short-lived, only a season. His current television show at the moment, Last Resort, apparently really good, recently cancelled due to low ratings. So he's working on the TV show, which is what is the good, what I reckon is good out of this. The other thing is Brandon T. Jackson is okay in everything I've seen him in. Of course, he was the goat-legged thing from Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
He also played the son in the Big Mama's Central House, like father, like son.
Horrible.
So, I think he's also in Lotto Ticket with Little Bow Wow, which he's pretty good in that.
Never even heard of
that. Yeah, it's a film with mostly black actors. It's pretty funny, from what I've seen. I haven't watched it all. I just haven't had a chance to.
Well, I know Eddie Murphy's doing cameos because he's now the police commissioner of New York.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So he'll be cameos every now and again.
Ah, that's, you know what? I love my Beverly Hills Cop. I'm still all for Beverly Hills Cop 3. I mean, it's not the best, but it's terrible.
Brilliant.
I do hope they eventually do get around to that remake without Brett Ratner, who seemed to be spearheading it at one point.
Yep.
As much as I don't like Brett Ratner, I really do like the Rush Hour films, but that's mostly because they're the only films that you'll ever see
Chris Rock and Jackie Chan.
Chris Rock and Jackie Chan.
No, it's not.
No,
Chris
it's actually
Rock.
The
Chris Tucker.
It's the only. It's the only films. He's been. Did you know he's been in 9 films?
Who?
Chris Tucker.
No way.
One of the highest paid actors in Hollywood. He's been in like 9 films. You can count them with your hands.
That is ridiculous.
Friday.
Okay.
Fifth Element.
He was good.
Rush Hour.
Element. Yeah.
Rush Hour 2.
Mm-hmm.
Rush Hour 3.
That's it? Seriously? There's nothing after Rush Hour 3?
No, there's one. There's he's
a Michael Jackson film clip, but
he's currently was one coming out later this year with him in it. I can't remember what it is, but he's been in there's probably one or two more that I'm forgetting, but that's it. And he's one of the highest paid actors in Hollywood. I always love that little fact because for Rush Hour 3, he's paid $40 million.
Wow,
making him because like, I don't know why it's. I think it's great because I think Chris Tucker is so great in everything he's in, and I think if you saturated the market with Chris Tucker, he would not be as good.
Yeah.
So every time there's a new film with Chris Tucker in it, it's like, I've got to watch it. And for the past 12 years, it's been a Rush Hour film. So. Yeah. He's in something else. I wish I remembered what it was because I really do want to see it. So moving on, the new... Deus Ex...
Speech impediment?
Yeah. Deus Ex Human Revolution movie has a whole bunch of people attached to it. Scott Derrickson will co-write it and direct it. He directed Exorcism of Emily Rose. And he co-wrote and directed the upcoming Sinister, really cool-looking horror film with Ethan Hawke in it. It'll be co-written by his Sinister co-writer, C. Robert Cargill. Produced by Roy Lee and Adrian Escariah. Adrian Escariah is, of course, thankful for that fucking terrible video game adaptation, Hitman. It was terrible.
I liked it.
It was terrible.
I liked it.
Roy Lee, he did The Departed and The Ring, two American remakes of Asian films. Very good Asian films.
Yes.
Except the Asian version of The Ring.
No, that was brilliant.
No, sorry. I'm thinking of the Asian version of The Grudge.
Yes.
That was just a mess of people dying.
That was a mess.
Yeah.
The Ring, original.
I can't remember. I was...
Brilliant.
Yeah. And John P. Middleton will be the executive producer, who, as far as I could tell, was producing the upcoming supernatural horror 7500, which I don't really know what that is.
Yeah, no. I've heard of it. Can't remember a thing. I'll find out.
Game of Thrones returning on 31st of the 3rd, 2013.
So excited.
I'm still...
I can't wait. And some information on that. Where are we? I had you... I don't know how to pronounce his name. Saran Hines.
Saran, of course, I've read all the books.
Who played Aberforth, which is Dumbledore's brother in final Harry Potter film. He's been in a lot of other different things, and you'd recognize the face if you actually saw him. For the life of me, I couldn't find any information on what he's been in, and I've seen him so many friggin' times, but he has been slotted to play Mance Rayder, which for those who read the books is the King of the Wildlings, or unofficial King of the Wildlings.
I gotta read these books.
It should be a very, very interesting take on Mance Rayder, because I think that's the perfect person to play him. So I'll put a picture up of the actor I'm speaking about. And,
it's because of his beard?
No. I don't know what it is. It's he's recognizable. You'll know him, I promise.
There was a first picture, great thing for a podcast, right? A picture. First picture released of Matt Damon in Elysium. He's bald, he's carrying this big gun that says Camrad on it. I'll post the picture. It looks pretty interesting and cool, but you know what? Neil Blomkamp did such a great job with District 9.
He did.
We have a plot synopsis here, though.
It's a bald Matt Damon, I'm happy.
Yeah. In the year 2159, two classes of people exist. The very wealthy, who live on pristine man-made station called Elysium, and the rest who live on an overpopulated ruined earth. Secretary Rhodes, played by Jodie Foster, a hardline government official, will stop at nothing to enforce anti-immigration laws, preserve the luxurious lifestyle of the citizens of Elysium.
Sort of recall.
That doesn't stop the people of Earth trying to get in by any means they can. When unlucky Max, Matt Damon, is backed into a corner, he agrees to take on the daunting mission that is, if successful, will not only save his life, but could bring equality to those polarized worlds. Okay, I haven't heard anything about this, though I didn't read that synopsis till just now. So
have we got trailers or anything else out yet?
No, okay. This is like, this picture is pretty much it. That's all out. There's a teaser trailer.
Production, so yeah, filming.
But... yeah, a teaser trailer that came out last year or something about some kids finding an alien or something.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember. It's around the internet. It's been around for a while. But Neil Blomkamp loves his segregation by the sound of it. Did it in District 9, which was supposed to, of course, mirror the apartheid, which was done really well. A new... really, really kind of awesome Evil Dead poster. I'll post it up as well. It says, the most terrifying film you'll ever experience. And then like a black and white picture of this chick. So I'm excited. You know, it's the Evil Dead. The trailer looked awesome.
Of course.
Joe Carnahan of Narc and Smokin' Aces and a third film I can't remember. The A-Team. How could I forget that? Such a great film. Is currently working on an adaptation of Nemesis. Mark Miller posted up on his website about him and Joe Carnahan and his brother Matt Carnahan working on a script for it now. For those of you who don't know, Nemesis is a comic book built around the idea that if Batman was actually the Joker. Now, I've read the first issue.
We're not talking Resident Evil Nemesis.
No, we're talking, Mark Miller is messed up. Guy, he is always kind of a great writer. I still don't like the Kick-Ass comics.
Mark Miller's comic book writing is legendary.
Yeah.
And he takes so many different weird takes on everything. Like, it takes a lot for a company to give him the rights to be able to fuck with their characters, but when he does, it's worth it in the end.
Yeah, it's... The Nemesis itself is interesting. For one, he looks like a white. He looks like Batman dressed all in white.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the picture. And the other thing is, in the first issue, I'm pretty sure he successfully kills the President of the United States with a train or something. I can't remember, but it's kind of crazy. It's because it's a character that just is so evil and just wins. Which, Joe Carnahan is the right guy to make any film. I don't think... from reading Nemesis, I know that Mark Miller's been trying to make a movie out of that for a while. Did not seem like a comic that would make a very good film. Or like originally Tony Scott was attached at some point to make it. So it looks like it's in the works. Which Joe Carnahan was apparently working on a 1970s Daredevil film.
Ooh.
Which sounds a lot more interesting than Nemesis to me anyways. Yeah. But if he's working on this now, he's probably not working on a new Daredevil film.
Anything that's better than that.
Matt Damon. No, the Matt Damon film.
It wasn't Matt Damon.
It was the other one.
What's his name?
Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck. Yeah, that.
You know, maybe if he directed it. Ben Affleck seems to be a great director.
Yeah.
So maybe, yeah.
Gotta see Argo.
Yeah, so gotta see that as well. Lastly, I've got there's an interview with Katie Sackhoff, who's in the new Riddick film. Katie Sackhoff is, of course, played Starbuck in Battlestar Galactica, and she played the Bionic Woman in the remake of The Bionic Woman. She's talking about the R rating of Riddick, which is awesome. There is a shitload of blood, then there's little pieces of nudity here and there. There's my nudity too. It's only side boob. For 3 to 5 seconds.
Good to know.
It's not that big of a deal. It's mostly for the language. My character and Matt Nable's character say fuck like every other word. It's kind of fantastic, actually. He must have said fuck 15 times in every single scene. It's pretty awesome, so it's mostly for language. So, new Riddick film for one.
Potty mouth. Nice.
Yeah, it's R-rated. Sailor
film.
They have a chance to do... Because the last one, The Chronicles of Riddick, I think was 50% awesome and 50% terrible. The awesome is anything not to do with the necromancers, and anything to do with the necromancers, the film immediately suffers for it. As much as I love Carl Urban and his necromancer, I think Riddick did... The best parts of Riddick are the opening bit on the Isis planet and him in the prison, then him escaping the prison.
And then, after that, it's a no mess.
Yeah, then it's all the necromorph bullshit.
Judi Dench was in that as well, wasn't
he? As a air elemental.
Yeah, that's right.
We've got the synopsis here for that as well. The infamous Riddick has been left for dead on a sun-scorched planet that appears to be lifeless. Soon, however, he finds himself fighting for survival against alien predators more lethal than any human he's encountered. So far, pretty much sounds like Pitch Black. The only way off is for Riddick to activate an emergency beacon and alert mercenaries who rapidly descend upon the planet in search for their bounty. The first ship to arrive carries a new breed of Merc, more lethal and violent, while the second is captained by a man whose pursuit of Riddick is more personal. Maybe it's Tombs. That would be cool. With time running out and a storm on the horizon that no one could survive, it just sounds like Pitch Black. His hunters won't leave the planet without Riddick's head as their trophy. So, you know what? I'm down for a new Riddick film. I guess Pitch Black was as cool as Pitch Black was.
It was, because at the time it was original. It wasn't, you didn't expect.
Yeah, the other thing is that the film, he originally died in the end, and the girl survived, but the studio was like, you know what, Riddick's a much more sellable character. So yeah. Riddick survived, and they eventually created the Chronicles of Riddick, which created a great game, Butcher Bay, and then a less than stellar movie.
Books and everything, yeah.
I actually have a story about Pitch Black. I heard about, it's weird for me, because I think it's 96 that film came out?
Yeah.
97 or something. I heard about that film about a year before it came out. We used to have a substitute teacher who would come through, and he used to work on film sets and stuff like that, so he'd tell us about Joey. And he was telling us about Pitch Black, which for years I somehow remembered it way later, but he's like, oh no, it's just because they filmed it in Australia. It's, and
lots
Jack,
of Australian actors in
there. Yeah, and a bunch of kids in it. So he was there teaching the kids. He's like, oh, they're making a film. It's about aliens that come out, attack people at night. These actors are in it, blah, 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 blah. And then I never thought about it again until years later. I was like, oh, wait, dude, that means that guy was on Pitch Black? Man, I wish I was in the movies when he was my substitute teacher, which is kind of awesome. That's pretty much all the news we have for movies and television at the moment. So if you think of anything else, let us know. If you have any questions or tell us your thoughts on anything, just let us know. So first we'll talk about some television, and this week's topic is Revolution.
Yes. I like the concept. The whole basis around the show is, we'll call it, they haven't really explained what has happened, but we'll...
It's a worldwide blackout, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, more than blackout. Every little...
For argument's sake, an EMP, pretty much.
Yes, a worldwide EMP, which is unfixable to a point.
Yeah, but took out batteries, took out anything electronic, which I think the show releasing at this time in the world as it is today is perfect. It really is, because everything is so technology-reliant. Even, 10-year-old kids have iPhones and iPods and... everything now, so to have no electricity and pretty much go back to the Dark Ages is brilliant. It really is.
Yeah, well,
I think it's
it's a kind of cool concept.
It's topical. If it was released 10 years ago, it wouldn't have worked.
Wouldn't have worked as well, yeah, because technology isn't as widespread as it is. Because from the flashback so far, it looks like the society breaks down within a week of losing technology, which is you want to hope would last a little longer than that.
Yeah.
It's created by Eric Kripke, who formerly created and ran Supernatural. It's produced by J.J. Abrams. The first episode, directed by Jon Favreau. So you have a pretty good bunch of names behind it. Some of the actors in it, Billy Burke plays Miles Matheson. Billy Burke is, of course, from Twilight.
Don't they hold that against him? He's brilliant in this show.
And Drive Angry, again, don't hold that against him. Drive Angry and Twilight are two terrible pieces of shit. And
I think, personally, he's the only one that saves this show at the moment.
So
it's surprising.
If the other names you would know would be Giancarlo Esposito. he was in The Usual Suspects and a bunch of other stuff in between. David Lyons, an Aussie. Yeah, go David Lyons. Which every geek should know from The Cape.
Bunch of other stuff. He was Gus in Breaking Bad.
David Lyons.
No.
Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah.
That's one fucking hell of a name.
Yeah.
David Lyons, the Australian guy that was in The Cape. Tim Gwinney plays their dad, plays a dad of the main character, Ben Matheson. He's been in a lot lately. Nothing I can see offhand, but I see him every now and then.
It's recognizable.
The mother is, of course, played by Elizabeth Mitchell, who is most famous through Lost. She was actually in Lost. I think she was also in V. V was a remake of an old sci-fi television series about lizard aliens invading humanity.
Not
it's
an energy
cool.
drink.
Good no. it's also got Myrna Bakker in it from Firefly. She plays the Lizard Queen.
Oh, yeah.
A few years ago. It lasted about two or three seasons.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of other actors in here that I probably don't, I don't really know offhand. Tracy Spiridakos, Zach Orth, Graham Roger, J.D. Palo, Daniela Alonso.
Zach Orth. Who I haven't seen in anything else ever.
No, I haven't seen him in anything.
And he now plays Aaron, I think it is.
Aaron Pittman.
Yeah. And
he's pretty good.
He's an awesome character. Like,
He's the former Google employee who's rich and had everything, and now since the blackout hit, he's lost everything.
Yeah.
Well, everyone's lost everything, but...
But, yeah, him more so than everything, because his whole career was based around technology. Yeah. All his money was...
And he's, of course, the smart fat guy, so...
Yeah.
He doesn't have much of a chance of surviving in a world. It's also, we forgot to mention, it's also set 15 years after the blackout.
Yeah.
So, the main character, Charlie, played by Tracy Spiridakos, is, of course, she's still late. So I think she's supposed to be like 18 or 19.
Yeah, something along
those
lines.
She looked like she was 5 or 6 when the blackout hit, and 15 years after that, so around 20.
Yeah, she's really short. There's been a few episodes I've seen where they've zoomed out and sort of showed her next to other characters, and she is a midget.
I didn't even notice.
Yeah.
Of course, with her, you don't really like her acting at all.
It's not so much her acting, it's her face. I think I just have to close my eyes every time that she's speaking, and then I think I'm good. But she has the worst facial expressions in the world, if you'd even call them facial expressions.
I just think they are a little weird. I don't think she's terrible. I do think she has some
terrible,
weird...
terrible. Like, it's watchable. It's just
her eyebrows do this thing where stuff
like
happens.
The Rock.
When The Rock from
When he was in wrestling, like with the whole
eyebrow thing. Yeah,
yeah, it's kind of like what she does, but it seems like it doesn't seem like she's doing it voluntarily. Like, it's an involuntary reaction when she's trying to show emotion. Like, it doesn't work.
It does.
Well.
It does look a bit off when you see other actors like Billy Burke and Daniela Alonso in this like heavy scene, and she's kind of just sitting there, like moving her eyebrows around, dancing around. Also, her character isn't that great. I don't think she comes off as super annoying, especially like I started watching episode 2,
like a bratty child.
The idea behind it is she's trying to get back her brother, and with the help of her uncle, Billy Burke. And the thing is, just every 5 seconds when she's just like, we've got to get back Danny, we've got to get Danny back, and then he's like, okay, I get it, we're going to get Danny. No, you don't get it. We've got to get Danny back. We're going to get Danny back. She's like, shut up, woman. Just let the show move forward. And we'll get Danny back at a pace. The character Danny, I think, is getting more interesting anyways.
He's getting a lot better. But I mean...
He spends most of the episodes in the enemy hands tied up to a cart.
Yeah.
Which I just saw the episode where he almost chokes that guy out. Which shows it that this kid is not as helpless as
which,
he first seems.
Interestingly, that guy who choked out was in the final season of Scrubs.
He looked familiar, but I couldn't pick
him. Yeah, Scrubs interns.
Oh, I didn't watch any of that.
It wasn't good, but he was a main guy in that, so that was kind of a weird throw-in.
Two of the characters we definitely have to talk about is Giancarlo Esposito, who plays Captain Tom Neville, who is pretty much the antagonist.
To a point. He's really, like, two sides of the coin. Like, later in the series, there's only 9 episodes now, but getting, like, further into it, on one side, he's a ruthless asshole.
But on the other side, he believes what he's doing is right.
Yeah, and he's got his family at home who he's loving and caring for.
Yeah.
And like, he's human, like he's got still got morals, still humanity left, but at the same time he's, you know.
So there's a militia which is enforcing rule, pretty much, and then he works for the militia. The other one is David Lyons, who plays Sebastian Monroe, who's the head of this militia.
Yeah.
Government,
pretty much.
Yeah,
he is.
I'm only 3 episodes in so far, but I can kind of see where the militia is forming. But he's an interesting character in the fact that, so far from what I've seen in the flashbacks before anything happens, he just couldn't care less. He's like, okay, I'm just gonna follow my friend, Billy Burke's Miles Matheson around, and oh wait, there's stuff happening outside. No, doesn't matter. We'll just keep walking. We weren't worried about it, and then even though he seems really evil and controlling, he just wants there to be order in this chaos. But he's going about it the wrong way.
Well, yeah, because the government collapsed and not the United States of America pretty much doesn't exist. It's just America. Like
it's every man for themselves. And yeah. Militia and rising.
The militia, because he's ex-military, has pretty much stockpiled all weapons and set himself up a little base. So he's command of a giant military, and it's the only thing, keeping the order.
Which is the other thing is it's also creating itself an evil by being kind of a ruthless militia. The thing I do like about the show, it's getting more
pretty much
and more
become a communist country.
Yeah, it's martial law.
Yeah.
It's cool too because each episode it seems to get more and more action packed, which it's television so you can't expect too much. But there's a lot of sword fighting in it, which is pretty well choreographed. Pretty cool. The militia dress like Confederate soldiers and they carry around old Confederate guns, the one shots that you have to pretty much reload after every shot.
Yeah, the powder and the,
which I think is really cool. I really like that era of stuff, and it gives this interesting kind of future past style of things.
Yeah.
Another thing is a character was introduced in episode 3. I don't know how long he lasts. Of course, he was the second captain that was introduced.
Yes.
God, I've forgotten the name of the actor. I didn't write it down because he was only guest star in the one I saw. He actually is moved across from Eric Kripke's last Supernatural. He played Satan in the fifth season. I can't remember his name, but he plays a really great bad guy in everything. He was also in Lost. He played a good guy, kind of, in Lost. I've forgotten his name. I'll figure out his name, but every time his name comes up in the opening credits of any show, I get excited. He was as good in this as he always is. He's the he's the first guy they help in the part in the flashback.
I know the guy you're talking about now.
Yeah.
For life of me, I don't remember his name, but
no,
I saw him, I was like, wow, that guy.
Yes, he's that guy. He's pretty much like, as soon as you see him, you know you're in for something special. He plays good guys, he plays bad guys. He kind of reminds me of an actor, Callum Keith Rennie, which off head, I can only think of him from Battlestar Galactica and The Invisible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen either of those.
Yeah.
He often plays a good guy and a bad guy. Both times he's especially great. They both kind of similarly remind me of each other. So I've only seen 3 episodes so far. You've seen
9.
Oh, so you've seen everything that there is.
It's up and down. It does get better, then it gets bad, then it gets good. A few episodes kind of run off track, and the only thing that keeps it together is the last, say, 5 or 10 minutes where they do the whole typical reveal and
conspiracy
then the episode.
Yeah.
Just so you have to keep watching. But, I mean, overall, it's not, like, amazing best show I've ever seen, but it's well worth a watch. Like, it's decent.
With the overarching conspiracy theory kind of thing that they've been doing a lot of TV shows now, they've got it in this as well, which I kind of trust Eric Kripke to pay off in the end. With Supernatural, he ran it for the span of seasons 1 through 5. After that, Sarah Gamble took over. But between those, pretty much everything he brought up had finished and ended. It has a beginning, it has a middle, and it has an end. And the show can continue after that regardless, even if they never continued it, but you felt secure in that there was an ending. So I'm safe in assuming that Eric Kripke kind of has an idea of where the show is going to be going.
I hope so.
First off, let's talk about Cabin in the Woods. Now, Cabin in the Woods is co-written by Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon, directed by Drew Goddard, who, of course, is one of Joss Whedon's writers who's worked with him in pretty much everything he has. It's a horror film wrapped in a horror film, horrorception. It's
horror cross inception. That was actually a pretty good description.
Yeah, it's you've got two stories going on at contingent in them. You've got the classic slasher horror film: 4 or 5 kids go out to a cabin in the woods to just get drunk and have a good time, which include Chris Hemsworth, Thor, if you didn't know who that was. Anna Hutchinson, who is, I believe she played the blonde.
Yes.
She's a Kiwi, actually. Fran Kras. Fran Kras.
Redheaded virgin.
Franz. No, he's the stoner.
Oh. Nice name, Fran.
Fran Kras. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was most recently
Joss Whedon style in Dollhouse.
He was also in Sixth Sense. No, not that one. Sorry, The Village. He was in The Village. He played one of the villagers. He was also in a television. He was also in a movie called The TV Set, which is actually really cool. It's David Duchovny trying to make a TV show. Fran Kras plays a terrible actor in that.
He was in Bigfoot Schmeckler's Cool Ideas.
Yes, he was. He played the
roommate.
That's right. Yes. Jesse Williams, who is the black guy.
Not really black.
No, he's dark. Tanned. He looks blacker now. He's currently in Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
And then, have I not written down, there's a redheaded chick. So Anna Hutchinson is either the redheaded chick or the blonde chick. I've missed one of the names.
And Amiak.
And then on the other side of the story, you have a bunch of people in a control room kind of observing what's happening. Well, I don't want to go into too much detail for those of you who want to watch it. Bradley Whitford, who is of course from the West Wing, and most people would know him as the bad guy from Billy Madison.
Yeah. yes.
Richard Jenkins, who is great in everything he's in. Most people probably know him from Step Brothers as the dad in Step Brothers. And Amy Acker is in it a bit. She's of course from Dollhouse and originally Angel. She played Winifred Burkle in Angel, and then she played the Doctor in Dollhouse. She's pretty much in it for their whole sequences, but she comes and goes as it is.
Yeah, she's not a main part.
The way at first I didn't know what I was expecting. I think the way Joss Whedon always explained it is you always hear the term a horror film to end all horror films. So I wasn't quite sure what I was getting into, and I didn't know that the horror film aspect of it would be such a love letter to horror films. Like, it is a horror film.
Yeah.
Yo, if you like horror films, this film's for you.
But and that's the funny thing though, is I'm not a fan of horror films at all. Like, I don't know what it is. Horror films just don't do it for me. And this, I really, really enjoyed. Like, from someone who never watches horror films. I've seen Saw, I watch all those types of stuff, but you know what I mean.
The first Saw was good. The second one was okay. The third one had a really cool twist near the end. The fourth one is pretty terrible. The fifth one...
Anything after...
Like, some of the fifth one's pretty good.
Anything after halfway through three.
Considering the fact that I've seen five of the seven of them, that's pretty good.
There's seven?
Chester Benningham's in one of them. Oh, gets his back ripped off or something. Wow. I think there's either six or seven. There's a lot. I can't believe I've actually seen five of them is the thing that gets me.
Well, yeah, either way. For those who aren't big horror film fans, it has a lot of cool twists that aren't really horror related, but are. So yeah,
basically everything that happens with Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins is black comedy, is pretty much how it comes across.
In the way that swearing at Japanese kids, and that guy fell off my bed in hysterics.
Just, so. Imagine Bradley Whitford saying "fuck you" to kids. I had to close my window; I was afraid the neighbors would hear it. It's pretty full on, but. The way this film balances its horror and its comedy is pretty good. There's actually a scene where there's really terrible horror going on in the background, and in the foreground, people just not caring, and it's kind of hilarious and messed up at the same time.
Yeah.
There's the third act of the film, which I don't really want to say anything about because it is the best part of the film. It ties everything together, and it's fuck.
Yeah.
Is what I said in last week when I wrote it down. It is messed up. It is awesome. There's a lot of little, like I said, love letter to horror films. The cabin itself resembles identically the cabin from Evil Dead. There's a moment when they're down at the basement and there's all these kind of different trinkets. There is... Chris Hemsworth picks up a, like, Rubik's Cube ball, which is obviously a direct reference to the Pinhead...
Hellraiser.
Yeah. I can't remember what the cube's called.
Oh, for the life of me.
But then there's also a reference to Hellraiser later on. Yeah. There's a reference to a lot of horror films.
Yeah, but you know what? It's sly references to horror films.
Yeah, and it's good because it's not like kind of in your face, like, hey guys, look, that was an Evil Dead reference. It's kind of like, if you know it, it's like, that's fucking awesome. If you don't, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and it's still good.
Great, like... This film's actually probably about 4 or 5 years old. It went through the MGM. It's shelved.
That old?
Yeah, it was shelved when MGM went under. They had nowhere to release it. This and Red Dawn were both shot around the time. So Chris Hemsworth filmed these films well before he was even Thor. So these films are going to benefit from him being Thor in their own.
Yeah.
So it's pretty good for a horror film, for everything else. I have a friend that loves Joss Whedon and doesn't like horror films. And yeah, I'm recommending this film is if you don't like horror films, you probably won't like it. But some of the Joss Whedon's stuff is really good in there. Tom Link makes an appearance as the intern. It's pretty funny. So this it's definitely a horror film. It's for horror film fans, and there's some stuff in there if you're a fan of Joss Whedon and stuff. So that one's pretty cool.
Check it out.
Yeah. If you haven't seen the trailer, don't watch the trailer. Just watch the film. The trailer gives away a lot of the stuff. Even though 5 minutes into the film, you can kind of guess where it's going.
No.
I could. I mean, because I'd seen the trailer and then combining the...
Oh, that's why. See, I hadn't seen the trailer. Yeah, I had no idea where
that
was going.
There you go. So you're lucky, man.
Don't watch the trailer.
Yeah, don't watch the trailer.
It threw me.
All right. Now we're going to jump into the film that we especially watched today. The 23rd Bond film, Skyfall.
Yes. Oh.
Dun.
I mean, for me personally, that was the best Bond film I have seen to date.
Mm.
I've seen all Bond films, and that, by far, is my favourite.
I haven't seen very many Bond films. I mean, I'm not a huge Bond fan. Of course, I've seen GoldenEye, but I saw that when I was a kid, so I can't really remember it that much. I remember The World's Not Enough. No, I don't. Wait, is it the one with...
Yeah, that was a Pierce Brosnan.
Was it the one with Madonna?
Yes.
Okay, I remember that. No, that was Die Another Day. It was the Madonna one.
Was it?
Yep. And The World Is Not Enough was the one after it with the saw blade that cuts through a ship in half.
Oh, yeah, Halle Berry.
I don't even remember that one. No, Halle Berry was Die Another Day.
Yeah, isn't that... I don't know.
That was with the Asian dude who gets a face full of diamonds.
Yes.
Yes. No. The World Is Not...
Ice Palace.
The World Is Not Enough is the sequel to... Well, the sequel is the one after GoldenEye. And I think Die Another Day is after The World Is Not Enough.
Yeah.
How many was Pierce Brosnan in?
Three or four. No, four.
Those are three, so...
Four.
What was after Die Another Day?
Because there was the one with... there was GoldenEye, obviously. Then there was the one with Madonna, the one with Halle Berry, and then the one with girl who was Charlie Sheen's ex-wife.
That was... I'm pretty sure she was in GoldenEye. Or The World's Not Enough. Oh, yes, yes. She played
Denise Richards.
She played the professor. Denise Richards. And then there's some point where they get on in a water city. Is that the one I'm thinking of?
No, there's like an underground tunnel with a giant bomb. And...
Am I thinking of the game?
Yeah.
Probably. There's a Bond game that is its entirely own fiction with its own actors
there's
and everything.
So much Bond.
But, okay, the point is, as much as I've seen the Bond films here and there, like, I didn't rush out to see Casino Royale. I actually didn't see it till after so Quantum of Solace. Quantum of Solace, I just caught. I missed the beginning of it. I kind of... was alright.
Confusing.
I watched...
A bit of a mess.
I didn't watch Casino Royale. I've only seen the beginning of Casino Royale. Never watched it.
That was brilliant.
But this is definitely a really awesome film. Even as my little affection for Bond is, because it plays with the nature of who Bond is as a person and what his relationship with M is.
Yeah.
And it's... There was a lot of...
reinvents key characters, which I loved. It reinvents Q, it reinvents M, Moneypenny, Bond himself. Like, it's... I don't know. If you've never, ever seen any Bond film
before,
you go and see this, this is a really good starting
point. I still reckon Daniel Craig looks better with facial hair than when he shaves.
No.
I love that little white beard on his chin.
No, I honestly thought he looked better shaved.
There is action, but I think it's more about the slow bits. I mean, even the movie doesn't start on a huge action scene. It kind of ramps up and it ramps up and it ramps up.
There's some really, really decent action scenes. Villain-wise, one of the best
Javier Bardem
had.
In his terrible English accent. Not his terrible English accent.
French.
His terrible English, because he's Mexican or Spanish.
It sounded French, I thought.
He doesn't speak English very well, and that adds to the kind of craziness of his character.
Yeah.
It's such a weird dimensional character.
He's
evil with a reason.
yeah, like his evil is justified, but
he's not like, oh, I'm evil because I can, oh, I just want all this money. But no, he has a specific crazy goal that is so kind of stupid and weird, but it's a thing that drives this character to the extreme odds of just
justified. That's
yeah,
the whole basis of
it. Yeah, everything is for this one small goal. And he's like, you know what? It makes sense to me, and it does. For his character, it makes perfect sense. He's like, I'm going to chase this thing till the ends of the earth.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do this thing. Which, Javier Bardem was so good in that. Another thing is, what I really liked is I've really liked the cinematography of the thing. The way the film looked. The whole end sequence was great. Oh. I mean, the location and everything.
Yeah.
There's actually a moment when they're staying on a roof near the end of the film, and it just was really cool. And it's just the framing wise and everything they kind of did with the visuals of that film was really good.
Definitely, I'd have to say 9 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was pretty long too. I think it was 2 hours 45.
Yeah,
it was so long they turned the lights on us at the cinema for 10 minutes trying to get us out of there, I think.
But yeah, definitely go and see this film. Even if you're not a Bond fan, go and see this film.
Yeah, there's a lot in there.
Brilliant.
That's pretty much all we got for film and TV. So let's move on to probably what we have biggest news for, I guess, is video games. So I don't really have that much video game news. There's obviously
news-wise.
Yeah, there's a Mass Effect. There's a new Mass Effect game which everyone knew.
And they asked the fans to send them tweets as to whether they want it to be a prequel or sequel.
Which
I sent them a tweet telling them they should shut down their Mass Effect project and go and make something worthwhile.
Well, see, for Mass Effect, the entire time I was playing Mass Effect 3 up until the point I hated it. Because everything before this point, great. It was about Mass Effect 3.
Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3/4 of 3.
Yeah.
And then it's... Yeah.
2 is probably one of my favorite games of all time. But in 3, the entire time I was playing it, because it gets to a point where the entire story of 3 is including everyone in the universe, and it's like, oh man, I remember when I was just this one dude, and it was awesome. I'm like sitting there going, man, I can't wait to play all these other stories in Mass Effect 4. I was like, I want a Solarian, and I want a ship, and that's all I want to do.
Yeah.
And that sounds awesome to me. And to the point where Mass Effect 3 just engulfed the entire universe, and it's like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
It's like, the ideas of other side stories, with nothing to do with Shepard, nothing to do with the Reapers, nothing to do with the center of the universe, kind of interests me. The news, anyways, is that the Mass Effect game won't be developed at Edmonton, which is where it's been developed, where Casey Hudson, the series executive producer, is stationed. But instead,
right near where I used to live in Canada, surprisingly enough, and I didn't even realize they were making Mass Effect 3 right around the corner.
Yeah, they feature. Is it Montreal or Edmonton where they feature in Mass Effect 3? It's Canada. It's Vancouver.
Yeah, it takes place in Vancouver.
Casey Hudson is, of course, still the executive producer who's done the first three, but he will not be there for the day-to-day production. He's going to appoint someone to be the head of production for Mass Effect over at Montreal. The other thing is it's using the Frostbite 2 engine, which is DICE's Frostbite 2 engine. They built Battlefield 3 on. They'll probably build Battlefield 4 on. But BioWare's already licensing. They're owned by the same company. Using that engine to build Dragon Age 3. So, who knows? That engine hasn't really... I don't know any other game that's working on that engine at the moment that's not Battlefield 3. So that could be super interesting. It could be pretty cool. I mean, by the time the next Mass Effect game rolls out, it'll be on like Xbox Durango and PlayStation Orbis.
Yeah.
So it'll be a completely different game, and I really hope it is something seriously different, story wise and everything wise. Yeah. Time have announced their all time 100 greatest video games of all time.
We're not even gonna like.
Talk about most of them.
We're not going to talk about much in the list, mainly because that's 100 games. It's going to fill up a lot of time.
There's one particularly we're going to quickly talk about, which ties into what we just talked about. But Troy's just going to read them out, give a little antidote if you get to them. I'm going to say if I have played any of them, because it starts from the 1970s. It's in no particular order. It's just by decade, 1970s, 80s, 90s, etc. I'm just going to say if I have played it, and I don't think it's one of the 100 greatest of games of all time. For one, I think these are a lot of the early ones. Anyways.
They're iconic, but they're not the greatest.
Yes, there's a lot of iconic games in there, but they're not the greatest. So, Troy, take it away.
Yeah. Okay, 1970s, the Oregon Trail, Hunt the Wampus, Pong, Breakout, Space Invaders, Adventure, Asteroids. 1980s, Battlezone, Defender, Pac-Man, Zork, Castle Wolfenstein, Centipede, Donkey Kong, Frogger, Gallagher, Tempest.
See, let me just stop there. You don't need Gallagher and Frogger both in there. I mean, they're not the same game, but still.
Not so much. They kicked off an arcade revolution, though.
Yeah.
Joust, Pitfall, King's Quest, Lode Runner, Mule, Paperboy, Tetris, Super Mario Brothers, Ultima 4, Castlevania, Legend of Zelda.
I'm going to stop as well. Castlevania, as good as the original Castlevania is, Castlevania, Symphony of the Night, you can't beat.
Oh, Symphony yeah, definitely. Night. But I mean, 80s wise.
Yeah, but you can't have both in there. You might as well just keep one.
Outrun, Contra, Leisure Suit Larry in the Land of the Lounge Lizards.
I don't know which one. There's like a nine in those games.
It's the very first one.
Ah, well, there you go.
Mega Man, NetHack, Punch-Out, Tecmo Bowl, and Prince of Persia. 90s, Solitaire, let's not even go there. Wing Commander, Civilization, Sonic the Hedgehog, Street Fighter 2, Dune 2, Mortal Kombat, Doom, Myst.
Okay, so they've got Wolfenstein and Doom in there. Two id games, two first-person shooters. You can only... That's a weird list.
It's time. Time don't even...
Yeah.
Where are we? Madden NFL 95. Marathon, SimCity 2000, Chrono Trigger, Quake, Resident Evil, Super Mario 64, Tomb Raider, Final Fantasy 7.
Final Fantasy 8 should be in there instead, just saying.
Anyway, GoldenEye, Myth, Ultima Online, Final Fantasy Tactics, Grim Fandango, that is fucking brilliant, Metal Gear Solid, StarCraft, Thief, EverQuest, Silent Hill, the 2000s. Now, here personally is where we get the tip of the iceberg games, but...
Some of them look like they should be on
some
there.
Some of them are great. Deus Ex, Diablo 2, The Sims, Animal Crossing...
Yeah, see, like, this as The Sims, like...
I know, but...
The Sims is a fun game. It's a great game.
They're probably going by sales rather than...
Maybe,
actual.
Yeah. It's not one of the 100 best of all time.
Hell no. Grand Theft Auto 3, Halo, Ico, Rez... Counter-Strike, Metroid Prime, Splinter Cell, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, Cave Story, Half-Life 2, Katamari, World of Warcraft, Guitar Hero, Shadow of the Colossus, Oblivion, Gears of War, Okami, Wii Sports, Bioshock.
Okay, wait. Oblivion, out of the three games, Morrowind, Oblivion, and Skyrim, Oblivion would be the bottom. Skyrim and Morrowind should be on that list, one of those two.
Should be. We get Bioshock, Call of Duty 4, Desktop Tower Defense, Portal, Rock Band, Braid, Angry Birds, fuck me, Demon's Souls, Flower.
Okay, Flower is a weird choice, Angry Birds is a terrible choice, that's not a great game, it's a very simple game.
Yeah, and the only two from this decade, the last two, are Batman Arkham City and Mass Effect 3. Now, Arkham City... I agree, because it won Game of the Year. It was won so many awards last year.
Well,
it's absolutely fucking brilliant. It's had, what, two remakes already?
Yeah.
Like, brilliant, brilliant game. But
Mass Effect 3. In the scale, out of the Mass Effect 3 game, out of the Mass Effect games,
out of the
Mass
trilogy,
Effect 3
yeah.
is by far the worst of the three.
Two was the best out of
two
that entire
is
trilogy.
The best of all Mass Effect games. It is probably one of the best games of all time. It is fucking Firefly the video game. You have
oh,
a ragtag group.
Getting about that one on the amazing iOS.
Oh yeah, the one where you play is it Jake?
Oh, you play someone.
You play the black guy
from
two.
Tap the screen. That's it.
Yeah, I know. But Mass Effect, even like out of the controversy and everything else around Mass Effect 3, it just. It makes no sense for that to even be on the list. If you got a choice out of any Mass Effect game, you choose two. Everyone knows that. You choose two.
Yep.
You don't choose three. Fucking time. Time. Yeah, all time. Fucking Zork. Actually, no, Zork's a great game.
Zork
that's
is
a joke.
Game.
Zork is an awesome game. So that's Time's list of all-time greatest. I'll post a link of it. You guys can have a look
and
read over. I think they do go into detail at each game and why. I don't know. I just skimmed over the list, kind of looked at it, and this is pretty shit. So
yeah, we'll leave the link and give us a few comments. Tell us pretty much what you think should or shouldn't be on the list. And Yes.
Now, as we mentioned last week, in fact, is that we were going to go to a Nintendo Wii U preview event.
VIP event, which was amazing.
So before we get to that, I just want to say that if anyone ever asks you or says an excuse as why would you ever want to be early, this is the perfect reason. So we show up there probably about half an hour to an hour.
Why would you ever get Mario tattooed on your body?
Yeah, that's fucking stupid. Why would you? It's like getting a Disturbed tattoo or something. So show up there an hour early. They obviously weren't open. They weren't going to open for a couple of hours. Comes out, looks at Troy, takes one look at him, head to toe. Dude's covered in Nintendo-related paraphernalia. Got it tattooed on his arm and just says, you know what, guys? If you want, come back tonight at 6 for our VIP event. There'll be free drinks and food. And so we took him up on the offer. And you know what? Free drinks and food and Nintendo Wii U. And the biggest of all is they unfortunately, during the day, didn't have Zombie U playable due to the fact that there would be kids around. So they had Scribblenauts instead. So we got there at the preview event, and since it was nighttime, they could put Zombie U on. So that was awesome. So before we go into detail about the Wii U, we stated about prior to this event anyways, prior to playing it, I am the skeptic, and Troy has Nintendo tattooed on his body, so you can pretty much guess what he is.
The fanboy.
When the original thing was announced at E3 last year, was it? Or the year before?
The year before, I do believe.
Oh yeah, because it was playable last E3, and they showed off the control of the E3 before, yeah. So, they pretty much announced it, and I looked at that fucking controller and said, this is the dumbest thing ever. I have an iPhone. If I really want to play a HD console with a touch screen, or with a smaller screen, I'll play my PSP. I still think, regardless of anything else that happened, that the ability to turn off the television and still play the fucking thing on the screen is a dumb idea, regardless. I thought, because I don't hate Nintendo. I love Nintendo. I loved the N64. I loved the NES. I loved the Super NES. The 64 is one console I wish I never sold, but I was a kid and didn't know any better. I have a GameCube. I love the GameCube. I'm not a huge fan of the Wii because of the motion controls. And I was really hoping that in between that time, that Nintendo would come out with something that wasn't just going to compete with the Xbox 360 and the PS3, is something completely new and different. Is, like everyone else, is we want our HD Zelda game and we want our HD Pokemon games. That's the two things we want out of Nintendo, and they're probably going to give us one of them. So,
yeah,
I was hugely, hugely disappointed by a very chipper Facebook post about it. Pretty much went dark to a point where he deleted it after some infighting on his Facebook page.
Yes.
So, I hated it. Troy was, you know, it didn't matter if it was good or bad. Troy was there.
Yep.
And now I've played it, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
The Wii U is a pretty awesome console.
My first impression of the entire thing, like obviously, you know, in my brain, I loved it before I even touched the thing, but for the sake of the podcast, for the sake of everyone else, I had to be skeptical in some ways. Picking up that controller for the first time is ridiculous. Put two smartphones next to each other and hold them up, and that is pretty much the weight of the controller.
Yeah, for the size it is it's, I've got an iPad here now, so it's probably smaller.
Smaller screen, yeah.
Cutting off to about there, you've got about, that's about the size. So holding an iPad, cutting off about a couple of centimeters at the top, it's probably the size of the controller. It looks bulky as hell. It looks unwieldy as shit. It is super light. I mean, we got a photo with it because we're crazy people, and we were both holding one hand of the controller, and immediately it's just like, it's paper. It's like a feather, man. Yeah. The thing is that surprised me. I mean, it's not the touchscreen is only single touch, but there's no reason why that controller should not be that light.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And it felt comfortable, extremely comfortable to
hold. Yeah, it did. It looked in the promo shots and everything else, it looks super unwieldy because your hands are so far apart.
Yeah.
But it's grooved at the back like most controllers, and your hand just fits in it. It's actually really easy to control.
Yeah.
With regards to Nintendo Land, is, well, they only had five games on offer.
Five, I think. Yeah, five we had.
They had Luigi's Mansion,
Animal Crossing, Donkey Kong, and
That's right.
The Ninja Star game and a Zelda game.
Oh, that's right, the Zelda one. I didn't play that. I still think the idea of Nintendo Land is to be their new Wii Sports, and Wii Sports makes so much more sense in the grand scheme of selling Wii consoles, is because you grab the controller, it's like, oh, it's like you're playing tennis. Oh, it's like you're playing golf. But, it's like you're doing this. It is showing off the technology of the screen, but it probably will not be as effective as Wii Sports was.
Now that the console's obviously been released in the US, the reviews of Nintendo Land and things are up on many different sites. And
they're actually pretty good.
Yeah, the thing that surprised me. Mainly, like, it's a good drink with your mates, party game type of thing, but because of the way the Wii U communicates with other Wii U consoles, it's become a really competitive game because there's a lot of cool mini games in there where you can, you know, do things faster or get more points than everyone else, and it notifies you when someone breaks your score. So it's become a really huge competition buster thing more than, you know.
Out of the games we played is, of course, Luigi's Mansion, in which one player who has the gamepad in their hand is a ghost, and so they can see the entire maze and where to go, and each of the other players only have torches. They're using Wiimotes. Their Wiimote vibrates as soon as the ghost gets close, and they kind of have to hit him with the torch. Teamwork, kind of this cool aspect. I played the ghost. I got the shit kicked out of me. It was cool. That was probably the one that I would have played the most out of any of them.
Yeah. Going back, we went back a couple of days later and actually played it, me and Gary, and he played as the ghost, and it took him about 30 seconds to nail everyone. If you do not use teamwork, you are screwed.
Yeah. That's like, I got the unfortunate bit of playing the ghost about the third time after everyone. And the first time, everyone's, nah. Second time, slowly, yeah. And then the third time, when I get the controller, everyone's like, let's fucking stack together and point our torches four ways. The Zelda one, I didn't actually play.
It's difficult. Extremely, extremely difficult.
I saw a guy just with two remotes shaking them around. And
yeah, but you get to a point, kind of the aspect that they added in the Wii Zeldas, where you have directional slashes.
Yeah.
And you get enemies that are holding shields or doing different stuff at a different direction. So you have to swing the Wiimote a certain direction to be able to do damage. But the guy who's using the gamepad is an archer and doesn't have a shield or anything to protect themselves. So you've got to try and protect them as well as still not getting screwed up. And there was a certain part of the game we could not get past.
Oh, okay. So
it does have a bit of strategy to it.
The other one, Animal Crossing, which was forced for 5-player.
No, you can actually play it less.
Okay.
It's a 3-5.
Okay, it's set up in such... It was set up there...
Demo-wise, it was, yeah.
Yeah, set up in such a way that there had to be... One player was the chaser, I guess, and the four players were the runners.
Yeah.
Which was kind of dicky. We only played that once, and I had two Wiimotes. The guy that was demoing had two Wiimotes, and Troy had the gamepad.
I wasn't impressed with it at first, and playing it a couple of days later, it is a lot of fun. Like, it really is. When you get a group of four people, like, working together, say three of them have got to stand at the base of a tree to get the fruit off. The more fruit you pick up, the slower your character runs. But so if the guards are chasing you, then you spit the fruit out or throw it behind you so you can run away from them.
Yeah, that's not something I was going to do with one hand on each controller.
Well, yeah, strategy-wise.
Still, you didn't manage to catch me, and I managed to get a shit ton of fruit, I'm just saying.
Still didn't win.
That seemed kind of neat, but I didn't really get a good shot at it, of course.
DK roll?
The DK roll, which is kind of dumb. You use the controller's gyroscope.
I loved it, and it looked simple, but it wasn't. Not in the slightest bit was that game simple.
It was kind of cool. It was kind of dumb. It was like, I get the idea is showing off the gyroscope in a way that you can use it. Just turning, you're driving a little cart thing through an obstacle course without trying to crash, and if you crash enough times, you just that's it. You don't get another retry at a checkpoint. You just die. I beat Troy. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I
was drunk by that point. Free booze.
Free booze was good. Yes. What was the last one?
And the ninja.
Oh, game. The ninja star one.
Turning the gamepad sideways
and then flicking ninja stars. I mean, it's a cool show off of that you use different pressure. Like, if you do it slowly, and the ninja star will only come out slowly. But if you flick it really hard, the ninja star will come flying out. But I played through it once, and then the Bulletin camera crew was there taking photos, and so they wanted to take a photo of us playing the Wii U, so yeah. She's restarted the demo and I've had to play through it twice, and it just, like, by the time you finish that one at least, it's just like, I don't ever want to do this again. This is not fun, this is boring.
It's like any demo, then you can only play it so many times on the same level before it sends you insane.
Yeah, so we can't say much more about the rest of the Nintendo Land stuff because we didn't play any of the other ones. They weren't on offer.
Yeah,
just the things
5 out of the 12, but
They also had Scribblenauts there, but by the time we got there, Scribblenauts was pretty much turned off 5 minutes later, so Troy is the only one that got a chance at that.
Scribblenauts has a lot of cool stuff that you can play around with. You can actually, in this one for the first time in a Scribblenauts game, can design your own items. So you can take an item, say a tree, and you can edit it to add an adjective to it, say zombie tree, and then...
Yeah.
Whenever someone types in zombie tree, it comes up with your version of that tree. But you can add, like,
arms, legs, faces, people. You can add pretty much anything you want.
Goat heads, fire, anything.
You can also alter the parameters of the item. So if this item does this, this happens. If this does this, this happens, etc. My only issue with it, of course, is that there's a PC version coming anyways, a week from now, I guess, because since the Wii U launched in America, the Wii version's already out, but the PC version, like, I see no reason to get for the two. The only differences between the two versions, anyways, is that there is, of course, Link, Zelda, Mario characters, other Nintendo related characters, but you can't use adjectives, you can't alter them in any way, yes. And the main difference is they have their own carts.
You can't alter them, but there's a lot of things you can do with them.
There's only, but the adjectives are all specific to the characters.
You can still give them things. You can put a bra on Mario. You can screw around with his hat.
You can't make
Link
him a killer.
Summon
a giant killer Mario.
No,
it's kind of it's still taking. But anyways,
you give him a mushroom. It becomes big and stomps on things.
Yeah, I still think the fact that there's a PC version available doesn't make the Wii U version enticing at all. The third game on offer was, of course, New Super Mario Brothers U. Which is the naming conventions of Nintendo, is giving everything it has a dumb name and continuing with that.
Yeah.
So, it's Mario. I played it. I was kind of like, yeah, it's Mario. I turned around watching Troy play it, and he fucking sniffed out every single secret that level had to offer. The girl demoing, who obviously doesn't work for Nintendo, was shocked and just going, what the fuck is he doing? How does he know? This can't happen. I can't. She kind of wanted to tell him what to do, but she was like, there's no point.
Couldn't comprehend it. It's the same old Mario. It really is. Like, I mean, the formula's there. There are new levels. There's new enemies. There's new suits. But it's the same fun platforming it's always been. It's more polished. It's running 60 frames a second.
The unfortunate difference with that is, since it's already out in the States, is, for one, you can't use the Pro Controller to play Mario, no. Super Mario Bros. U. The other thing, which is a huge dick thing, which was what we saw, is... You can, of course, you can play it with the gamepad, and it emulates the screen on the gamepad screen, so you can do that whole turn off the TV thing and look down at the screen, but whoever doesn't have their own TV or a second TV in the house this day and age, there is obviously not going to have enough money to buy a Wii U.
Yeah.
There's no point. It's a weird feature for it to have. It's neat, but it's weird. But you can play it on the gamepad, but... If you want to play two-player, both players have to use a Wiimote. One player can't play with the gamepad while another one uses a Wiimote.
Yeah, it's kind of odd.
It adds a feature where you tap on the screen, you build squares, but it's kind of useless. Like, imagine... because
later, for the demo, yeah, later levels, like, crazy-ass hard levels.
That's only purposeful if you want someone to sit there and watch you play and kind of help you out.
Yeah. That's the whole point. There's going to be crazy hard DLC that they're releasing to what they did with the 3DS DLC, where these levels are stupid. If anyone ever did the extra levels on Super Mario World, they'll understand what I'm talking about. Like, enemies throwing at you in every direction you can ever think of. Ice, like, for the ground, it's ice, so you can't even stop. It's just... like, stupid, stupid hard. So if you've got that person using the gamepad helping you out, then it's going to make
a big
difference.
Okay, just let's imagine this for a second, right? You go out, first day the Wii U comes out, you buy a Wii U, you get new Super Mario Brothers U, you're like, I want to play some two-player. So you buy a gamepad, so you buy the Pro Controller, So you've got a gamepad for you. You got a pro controller for you, mate. You come home, you turn it on. It's like, oh shit, man, you need Wii U-motes. It's like, all right, cool. I've got one Wii U-mote from my old Wii U, my old Wii. It's kind of retarded that Nintendo kind of.
But that's a huge selling point for the Wii U too. Is the fact that so many families and so many different people bought a Wii, and for the peripherals to be able.
It sucks though that you have to have two Wiimotes. Like, I see no reason for them to just allow a person to play on the controller.
But they're so cheap nowadays too, for a Wiimote.
But then again, it's kind of annoying, forcing people to. Okay,
there'll be. Then it might have just been the demo. There has to be some option.
No, there isn't. That's one of the main things that's come out. Like, for Nintendo to compromise and go, okay, we're gonna give out a pro controller, but we're not even going to support it with first party games.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird,
I guess.
Okay, so on to the fourth game. So for me, I wasn't too impressed by Nintendo Land and Mario Brothers. Like, they're cool in their own right, but they're not selling points for the Wii U for me anyways. But Zombie U, continuing Nintendo's trend of giving everything fucking terrible names, and Ubisoft's trend of supporting every console release ever.
Yep.
The name came slightly less dumb when I actually found out what it is that Zombie, Z-O-M-B-I, is Ubisoft's first ever released game.
Yeah.
1980. I think it was 1980. This isn't a remake in any respect. But Zombie U, less of a dumb name. This game itself has kind of a cool origin. It originally started as a game called Killer Freaks from Outer Space, in which one player uses the pro controller to spawn alien enemies, and the other player one player using the gamepad. It's fucking names. One player using the gamepad to spawn enemies, another player using the pro controller to first-person shoot. Which they got to a point where it's kind of not fun because all the aliens they made kind of looked like alien version of Rabbids, another Ubisoft thing, and they're always shooting downwards. And
that sounds horrible because then you just get someone that goes spastic and, you know, just starts hitting the gamepad as fast as they can, spawning piles of stupid enemies.
It would have been to a point where I've seen them. This mode was carried over into Zombie U anyways. Yeah. But I've seen people, there's only certain spawn areas and you have a certain amount of spawns
per. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But they kind of got to the point where it's like, we like this idea, but it's not so fun to a point, is the person shooting is always pointing down. And then eventually went on to make Zombie U, which, considering the fact killer aliens from outer space, killer freaks from outer space, was a game that existed a year ago.
Yeah.
Zombie U to be made and altered in a year is amazing. Polygon have a really awesome story about that if anyone wants to look it up.
The way Zombie U is, I mean, the whole game itself, you're not just one survivor, you're many. If you die as, say, this 26-year-old girl, then she becomes a zombie. The next person just shows, say, you're a 43-year-old businessman or something like that. Like, it's always a random set of characters. If for some reason you're crap and you die in the game, the next character you play as, you can go back to where you died as the first character, and they will be a zombie, kill them and loot them, get all your guns back, get all your stuff back. If you're in a multiplayer environment connected online, if you die and you want to go back and get your stuff, if someone else online has popped into your game, they can run and steal all your crap before you do. So there's a really cool, challenging group element to it. But it also, in that respect, if someone else dies within the area you're in, on the top right hand side of your gamepad and on your TV, you'll get a notification saying, let's say, character max level 17 died in this area, and your map will tell you which way to go to find that person's body and get their loot before their next character respawns and comes back to it.
Which we found under your options menu, your inventory menu, you also have a character menu, which is a kind of dynamic menu. Kill certain amount of zombies with a certain amount of weapon to get better with those weapons. So when you die, you lose your level progression as well. So you kind of... No, it's a new character.
Oh.
So you have to redo all that kind of stuff. So dying in it, so obviously being careful, and you can die pretty quickly. In our go, Troy ran through first, And then I ran through after him. Of course, Troy took all the fucking ammo and all the fucking guns. So by the time I ran through there, I had the shotgun and then I had the pistol and
a cricket bat.
I ran out of ammo quickly. Luckily, I shot the fuck in the legs and then blew his brains out. But for the demo purposes of the demo,
after you smacked them twice and knocked the helmet off their head to be able to do a headshot.
Yeah. He didn't have the gun on him. He only had some ammo for the pistol. So I eventually ran out of ammo and some spitting zombie came up and killed me pretty quickly. So you can die and get overrun pretty quickly, which is really cool for a zombie game. The inventory management system is a really cool idea. Of course, when you loot something, your character goes into third person and then you have to look down at your screen and drag every single item away.
Yeah, no pause. Everything's in real time.
Which is just really kind of cool. You can get snuck up on while searching inventory.
The scanning of items is pretty cool as well.
Watching Troy do it, it looked really dumb. Of course, you have to hold one of the buttons and you use the Wii remote to scan the environment so you can see, okay, there's an item there. That character doesn't have anything, so you kind of make everything quicker and simpler. It looked like it would get annoying after the first two times, but
it was similar to the search function on Resident Evil Revelations on 3DS. Kind of had a scanner where you scan the room for ammo, for guns, for hidden messages, whatever else, which is, I mean, it works well in this because, I mean, what we found, one of a code we were actually being told by their so-called event staff or whatever they use for these events, the guy was trying to tell us, oh, go down this hallway, go this way, and I'm like, yeah, wait a second, and scanned one of the pictures and it had a code on there. And he's like, oh, yeah, you should have scanned that.
Yeah.
Like telling us everything after we'd done it. And the code that I scanned works for a door later on, which is an ammo storage, so you get heaps of guns and weapons and things like that. So you've got to juggle the strategy with the real-time events happening around you. So.
It's really cool, yeah. It's because I found myself every time I'd walk into a new room, I'd just automatically scan it, looking for items. Of course, for me anyways, as much as I do want to play Zombie U, I don't think there's enough games coming out when this Wii U does land in Australia. Of course, I was told by the EB rep that if I don't pre-order by the 18th, I probably won't get a Wii U until next March. So I didn't pre-order, of course. Zombie U looks like a game I really want to play. But aside from that, there's not a lot of launch for me anyways. But that aside, the controller's really cool. Controller's really interesting. The touch screen, the weight, the everything. As much as I don't think the feature where you can play it on the small screen instead of the TV if someone needs to watch something is very useful. I can see that being useful in a situation where you buy the Wii U for a family with kids and then they only really have the kind of lounge room TV, so the kid's playing things, the parent wants to watch the news, flips over and the kid gets to look down at the controller, which doesn't work in all cases such as Zombie U. You can't use the controller. The Nintendo Land minigames need use of the TV and the controller at the same time. But Super Mario Brothers U will always use it. A lot of Nintendo first party games will of course use it. But for what I've seen is it's not a complete write off. It's absolutely interesting, and depending on what games they make in the coming future, it has super amounts of potential.
60 frames per second. The notification system on the actual console itself is pretty cool.
Yeah.
The whole top right hand corner when anything happens.
Which I don't think was there at launch. No, in the Wii U launch in America had a lot of issues. A lot of its online features were not there.
There's day one updates for all the stuff and the shop and everything like that, but yeah.
It's not going to be a problem for us in another couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So, of course, I'm not going to get one, not till next year, not till there's some more games out, interesting games that aren't third-party remakes of Xbox games. But Troy, of course, is day one.
Yeah, as soon as I have one, I will let you guys know.
So it's really interesting for someone that didn't have any interest before. It was cool to play it and have a look. I do want to say this though, I've never been to any sort of. I went to the EB Expo, but I didn't really play a lot of games there. No one was in the bar, and there was a pool table and everything. So we spent most of the day in that.
Yeah.
Go to a video games expo, get drunk. That's what you do.
Yeah.
But I've never been in a situation where I've had to play games in front of a rep. Now. It's really funny because, of course, I play a shit ton of games. I know Troy plays a shit ton of games. You, as a gamer, you get to a point where you just pick up a game and then the tutorials are annoying as shit. It's like, I know what I gotta do. Okay, oh, well, A is jump. are a shoot. Cool, great. And you're sitting through this tutorial yelling at the screen. Then you have to be nice to a rep who comes up to me and goes, and then Troy's got the control and he's like pointing at, okay, you use that one to look around and this one to shoot. You hold the left trigger to ready your gun and you use the right trigger to shoot. You do this, that, and everything else. And it's, of course, we already know everything about there is to know about zombie. You and the guy's going, oh, so when you die, you have to go to your character, pick up all your stuff. Oh, yeah, when you're looting someone, it's like, without, because you don't want to be rude.
You're going to bite your tongue.
Yeah, you don't want to say, listen, mate, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I fucking know. It's like, I prefaced by asking, do you know if this game runs 60 frames a second or not? Which is a huge, which isn't that technologically as a question. And obviously, I haven't been briefed on that kind of stuff, but he kind of was like, well, you can loot corpses. So,
yeah.
It's kind of weird being in a situation like that.
Yeah.
And that, we don't really, that brings to end our video game talk because I haven't had a chance to actually play Hitman, which came out this week. I've got a copy ready to play, but I've been too busy to play, which is, it's awesome to say I've been too busy to play something.
I've been playing Puzzle Quest in my spare time.
Fucking Puzzle
Quest. I haven't had a lot of spare time and yeah, Puzzle Quest. Play it. It's good.
Let's go.
Do like Bejeweled with spells.
Why don't you play the Squaresoft one?
Nah, don't have time. Play Puzzle Quest.
I, in that time, managed to remember the things I'd forgotten earlier. The actor in which was Satan in Supernatural and was the captain in Revolution. Mark Pellegrino is his name. He is in a lot of things. He's pretty awesome. You should check him out. Troy.
Special.
Doesn't know what he's doing. What are you doing now?
No, nothing. I'm done.
Okay. Are you finished?
Yeah.
Okay. Troy attempting to use an iPad is like watching a monkey try to break open a coconut. The other thing is The Nines is the name of the Ryan Reynolds and Melissa McCarthy film. It's really interesting. There's three stories unto one where Ryan Reynolds plays a writer, a actor, I think a drug-addled actor and something else. Really interesting concept about people and stuff. So you should check it out. I can't remember the writer-director's name, but it's a really cool film. Anything else, Troy?
Nothing that I can think of.
Nothing that I can think of. Okay, so that's pretty much us for the week, guys. If you have any thoughts, suggestions, criticisms, anything, please feel free to send them to us. Our Facebook page is, of course, facebook.com/PopCultureAndWhiskey. We're on Twitter at TUSPCAW or me at Genkaku, GNKKAKU, or you can email us at popcultureandwhiskey@gmail.com. And that's pretty much all we have for this week. Hopefully we're going to try to stick to a Friday schedule, so release a new episode every Friday with all the information during the week. With that, guys, go see Skyfall, watch some Revolution, and probably not yet, because of obvious reasons, play the Wii U. I'm Reese.
And I'm Troy.
And we'll see you around.
Thanks, guys.
See you around.